Today is Thursday. It is October 19th, 2017. It is 11:12 in the morning. Yes, it's my birthday. This is John Williams, and we are the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast recorded in the studios of WGN Radio. If you think this is swell, and it will be, check out my weekday show Monday through Friday from 1 to 3 and Saturdays from 10 to noon.
All right, I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of the Business Lunch on WGN. I get it. Happy birthday.
We did this last week, and we don't have
to. Did we? I actually forgot.
Well, here's a funny thing that happens. On your birthday, if you sleep next to your phone, as I do, starting at 4 in the morning, your friends go, oh, it's John's birthday, and they start texting and tweeting and emailing and calling you, and it's like,
I don't have friends.
I would rather be sleeping till 9 than looking over in a groggy thing and go, oh, thanks, Bob. So anyway, thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.
I almost just spit out my coffee.
Seuss water or coffee through her
nose. The least gracious thank you for a birthday.
Three, two, one.
I'm Kristen McQuarrie, member of the editorial board, and my birthday is December 26th. Please send gifts.
It is?
You poor thing. What a
Capricorn.
Lousy birthday. Wow.
I'm probably among the worst.
I thought mine was bad. I'm on the 12th day of Christmas, January 6th.
Oh, no kidding. Well, that's terrible, too. My wife's January 4th.
But people are, Brenda and I would agree that people are just absolutely sick of partying by then.
Can I do mine again? I'm Steve Bertrand, host of the Business Lunch on WGN, and I'm sane enough to know that none of you cares when my birthday is. Okay.
Affirmative.
But I have to introduce myself. Okay. I'm the dead right columnist, Eric Zorn, from the Tribune. I write Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
Did he say alt-right?
I believe he said alt-right. I heard alt-right.
Dead right because I'm contrasting myself with the umpire in last night's.
Oh, dead wrong.
Who admitted he was dead wrong about that swing. So.
Yeah, well, at least the Cubs got through some bad officiating and bad hitting on their part and will play another game later this day. Donald Trump bizarrely suggested that he does better outreach to Gold Star families than past presidents this week. Each day, his argumentative style makes everything worse. Plus, that's not even a real Renoir, Donald. We've got we have the real two sisters on a terrace, Mr. President, right here at the Art Institute of Chicago. And what is this rich man's guilt? Donald Trump evidently pledged $25,000 to the family of a soldier who was killed and then didn't pay it, at least didn't pay it in a timely fashion. Eric, was this going to be remembered as one of his strange, and considering the source, is this one of his strangest weeks?
It's a very strange week. I don't know if it's the scariest, because all these things, these errors are somewhat minor, really. I mean, they're troubling, but the thing that's actually much more interesting to me, what's going on, is this business with Korea, and everyone is all upset about that. And what happened in this raid in Niger? What was that about? That's the thing that's kind of puzzling here. But all that's been lost in this other fussing and the anthem controversy and so on.
By the way, we are saying Niger now instead of Niger. Is that new to you guys, too? I always said Niger when I saw it on a map. I didn't say Niger a lot, but it's Niger, huh?
It's better than how you could accidentally mispronounce it like my kids did once.
Was that a smack at me, Kristen?
No.
You all knew Niger, huh?
Duh.
I mean, when they said Chile a few years ago.
Chile. It's on the first syllable, Chile.
Okay, fine. Chile. Steve, you want to chime in at all?
I don't. I'm enjoying this.
Good. Okay. Eric, I thought that the Niger story feels a little like Benghazi to me.
A little bit. It's just that it's puzzling right now what happened, what they were doing there and so on. It's, so far I would not call it a huge scandal. But Trump sort of brought this on himself by delaying talking about it or mentioning it. And then, the question comes up in this news conference, fairly, innocuous. What about why haven't you contacted these families? And instead of saying, I'm on that, a lot of things are going on, a lot of balls in the air, I'm going to get to that. He instead has to turn it into something about himself, about Obama, about previous presidents. Turns this into this big issue, followed up then by revelation in the Washington Post that although he says he calls all these families, but they found 9 families that he hadn't called. And it's just this crazy ability that he's got to just say the wrong thing and just put his foot in it all the time.
John, you had a texter on your show. I don't know if you saw it, but the person texted, I think it's brilliant that Donald Trump, when he's doing that sort of thing about Obama and Bush and I do it, and it was like Tommy Smothers. I mean, it was like a Smothers Brothers routine. You know, when Tommy would just start talking and then he just would continue to say words, they would just keep coming out and all of a sudden he was responsible for them. That's exactly what the president did. Well, then, you know, and I do, some people do, and I don't know if that, you know, and the Obama, you know, that's exactly what he did. It was a Tommy Smothers.
Sure, the follow-up question at that press conference called him on it and he said, well, I didn't say that. And then he said, he maybe sometimes didn't, I don't know. And I thought, why are you talking? I mean, was General Kelly or Sarah Sanders or somebody somewhere going, stop talking?
You know, and that's the thing, you know, about this. We can talk about the call that the congresswoman overheard. But the next day, the president challenged the press to go to his chief of staff and ask him about his slain son or his fallen son. To verify his political remark. And I think that does real damage and just shows a complete lack of sensitivity when it comes to the people around him.
And you know what bothers me, Kristen, is now we're all fact-checking a story that has no real bearing on our lives in any way. Does Donald Trump grieve sufficiently? Does he write letters or call?
It's absolutely ridiculous.
It's absolutely
ridiculous that you have the Washington Post tracking down families to find out if the president called them and if they liked it and was he nice and did he say the right thing. It is outrageous with all of the other things going on in this world that you would dedicate a reporter to doing that. And John Kelly said as much. He actually was very... he found it very disconcerting that the congresswoman tried to politicize it. That's from his mouth. And yes, he lost a son in Afghanistan. So I'm going to trust his feelings in a moment like this more than the congresswoman's or the back and forth between what he said and didn't say. Who cares?
Well, I agree with you. It's ridiculous to go back and try to talk to every Gold Star family and, you know, bring back this memory for them. There's no need in that. The president politicized it first. He absolutely did. And, you know, the congresswoman gave a lengthy interview. I don't know if you listened to it, John, but on MSNBC.
I did.
I think it was yesterday. It was very touching. And she was asked that, you know, why are you politicizing this? And she said, look, I was asked the question and I answered it. Okay, fine. She probably is guilty of politicizing it. But she also knew this young man. And this young man came up through her mentoring program in her district. And she was absolutely eloquent about what he had accomplished and about what he left behind. So it wasn't just a slam at the president. I mean, there was a little bit more to it. And did she politicize it? Okay, I suppose she did. And it's not an excuse to say he started it, but he started it. I mean, he's the one who started
it. He starts everything.
But would it have been, would she have even been interviewed about this? People have even asked the congresswoman about this if Trump hadn't started this conversation the way he did.
No, and you know, and again, the other thing is he said, well, I wrote the letters, and they're going to go out. I wrote them over the weekend, they're going to go out tonight. That's not true. You know, this, and then he only called them after being prompted to call them. So, I mean, I think there is some relevance. I think the personal insight into it, and it's not a story, it's not damning, it's just an insight into him, is that he didn't, in this call, refer to LaDavid, I'm sorry, I don't have his last name, by his name. He referred to him as your guy. You know, so he wasn't even equipped enough or didn't that's not in his DNA enough to emote to these victims, you know.
Well, I'm not shocked that he doesn't know that young man's name, and it's a shame that he didn't have the sort of foresight to have it written down in front of him.
That's a staffing issue, too, you're talking about.
Sure it is.
It was written in front of him, I'm sure it was.
Do we really want the president to call every single family of every single soldier who passes away? It would be nice, but we've lost, I saw this week, since 9/11. 6,900 Americans have been killed in overseas wars. Between 2004 and 2007, President Bush wrote to more than 800 families. At some point, it becomes a really good idea that they just can't execute, not with any meaning.
And
particularly for somebody like Donald Trump, who doesn't communicate well with humans on a personal level anyway, I think they should. Would you want a call from him anyway? I mean, seriously.
Okay,
would you?
Absolutely, completely agree with you. But it started by him saying, I do this better than the others did.
Well,
that's
why
it started.
Okay, but then to Kristen's point, let him have that. Let him have it. He's either lying or you know, just bragging for no apparent reason. I've got 10 examples of that outside of this
good
story.
Point everyone out, because when you stop pointing them out, it becomes normalized.
I've seen that written. I've heard it. I just disagree with it. It's like the Serenity Prayer. I mean, we know who this guy is. Grant me the courage to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Right.
You can sit here and get worked up about tweets and all this other kind of stuff, or you can focus on policy and what he might be able to achieve to actually make the lives of Americans better through whatever, tax reform, tax cuts, Obamacare, things that are really wrong in this country. And or we can just sit here and discuss every single day what he tweeted and how we don't like him.
I'm not as far along as Kristen in my 12-step process of accepting Trump as president. But I do think that you have to continue to call him out on his lies. I mean, we don't have to turn everything into a huge story, but you know, he comes out and then he says, like, oh, I've got proof that what I said was true. And he doesn't have proof, he didn't have the tapes of Comey. He didn't have proof about Obama wiretapping him and so on. I mean, I think it's important to continue to harp on this stuff.
You know, one thing I'm asking for, Eric, is just moderation. I think that's what Kristen wants. Steve, I'm the one that did the brackets and preceded each video on the cuckoo Trump brackets with this isn't normal, and if we forget that, it will be. I don't want it to be. I think it needs to be pointed out, but then what do we do with that? I'm more exercised if the president lies to us about health care taxes. That should garner more attention than – I mean, so he has this Renoir. It was on his plane. He told the reporter that's the original. And the guy goes, no, it's at the Art Institute. And so there's this back and forth. And the next day, the same thing happens. Trump points in his plane as they're flying back east. He says, you know, that's the original. And he says, no, it's not. When the president did his first 60-minute sit-down interview after he won the election, it's a very staged thing for the president. It's at his place.
Leslie Stahl, right?
Behind him is the same Renoir. I don't know if he thinks it's the original or he thinks it's just awesome and pretty to represent the original. I don't know what he's thinking. But, you know, we just have a guy who's not real tethered to reality or the truth.
I'd love to hear that he paid, like, you know, $75 million for a poster that someone framed from the museum store.
Well, he wouldn't have, but his foundation might have.
You guys,
nice one.
Thank you, Steve. The troubling thing to me, more than a week after Harvey Weinstein has been revealed to us, as the cover of Time just put it, as a producer, predator, and pariah, I'm alarmed not at the number of women who are now saying Me Too. I'm alarmed at the number of men who must be complicit, who are out there as predators like Weinstein. For thousands and thousands and thousands of women to be using the hashtag Me Too this week means Harvey didn't go after them all, that there must just be innumerable men out there who also harass or assault women in the workplace, and everybody's quiet about it. Someone you or I know may not only be a victim, but it's so creepy to think that these guys are in our midst and we don't know it. We may revere them. We may work for them. How did that happen?
I think there's a distinction to be made. And, you know, I'm sort of an anti-feminist in that I don't think the feminist movement represents me. I don't know that in a lot of the Me Too stories, they're actually talking about harassment and assault. I think there's a big difference between being actually sexually harassed or having a boss or someone make inappropriate comments. And I think the inappropriate comments happens all too often as well and makes women very uncomfortable, and it's wrong, and it often does come from a superior. But that is different from being sexually harassed or assaulted. And I'm just not sure I'm seeing the distinction in some of the stories that I'm seeing on Facebook and social media.
Yeah, well, the hashtag is all-encompassing, that's for sure.
But all of it should stop, certainly in the workplace, right?
Well, of course. But I also think there is a huge bright line, a difference between a boss saying something that makes you uncomfortable and something that you then can make sure that as a woman you're not going to tolerate that, or you change your relationship or the way that you deal with that person, and being sexually harassed, which is a very legal term. And I'm just, yes, it's all wrong, but there's a big difference.
Well, I give great deference to your views on this, but it still strikes me that what we need to have is some sort of method for checking this and reporting it and having it be understood that this is something that we do talk about, we do report, and that what has happened, I think, in the past is that if a woman is, I mean, there may be a bright line between those two, but I think someone approaches that line with the inappropriate comments, and then you know is using that to test where that line might be, and so there has to be some sort of way in that we check that we have some sort of method, some sort of systems to block that.
Well, I think we all agree on that, but the question is whether the Me Too hashtag is a good measuring stick, right? And I think it's probably, if I can speak for you, Kristen, probably not a good measuring stick, because it's a lot of it is done retweeted empathetically. A lot of it, like you said, might have been short of physical abuse. I mean, we can read into the million figure what we want to read into it. Are these people who were physically abused? Are these people who were overly sensitive? Are these people who were right? You know, we don't know by a retweet.
Yeah, I guess I also think I don't have to sit here and you don't have to defer to me. You all work in workplaces. We work in newsrooms. I think there is a level of over political correctness that has invaded a lot of these spaces where we're not allowed to make a joke or just have normal conversation without someone interpreting it to be more than it is. And I'm not suggesting that these women don't have true stories to tell. I'm not surprised at all. I remember Eric saying he was surprised just at the number of women who say, well, of course, this has happened. And yes, it has happened and it's wrong. And maybe more women rising through the ranks of corporations would ease that. But again, I think part of this is just personal responsibility yourself. If you have someone making an inappropriate comment to you, handling it, if it is something more than that, then absolutely reporting it. I'm just not sure that the Me Too hashtag is capturing the difference.
Well, the gender roles are surely reversed here, aren't they? I mean,
one reason I say that I would defer to Kristen, in my entire career, I've never felt threatened by a woman in any kind of situation like that, or a man for that matter. Yeah. I've never felt like I have to take any kind of steps, not say something, stay away from someone because I'm afraid that things are going in a direction that makes me uncomfortable. As a man, I think that male privilege maybe is the word, or just that's something that I don't have to deal with, and I'll bet you guys don't have to deal with it either. And I'm sure that Kristen does have to deal with that in a way that I don't. Right? Am I wrong?
I would say you are correct. I don't think it's like a male privilege thing, and I don't know that even threatened is the right word, but there are certainly countless situations that I've been in where I have felt uncomfortable by a male boss saying something, doing something, looking at me a certain way, making a comment. And I won't go into great detail, but I was at a point at one job where I actually started documenting stuff. So it's not like I'm trying to brush this aside. I'm just making the distinction between actual sexual harassment and people making jokes or comments that are just inappropriate for a boss to be saying to a female.
Yeah, but aren't those
colleague?
Just different shades of the same? You know, I mean, one kind of, you know, leads, I don't know.
I guarantee you that if you talk to every woman I've ever spoken to in the workplace, that they will have misunderstood that I will have said something that they took to be offensive in some way. I promise you that I never intended to be offensive, or certainly never harassed or, you know, molested. But a lot of it is in the ear of the beholder too, the way people hear things.
Okay. I mean, you're not allowed to say like, hey, that's a pretty, you look good in red, or this is a nice sweater or something. Some women would be like, stop looking at my breasts.
Or Kristen, you know? You could say that to 95% of the people, and 2% of the people might hear it in a different way. That you said it certainly wasn't offensive on your part, but it can be taken that way.
Well, I feel like this is like the pornography argument. We're all kind of talking around the same thing here. I can't define it, but I would recognize it if I saw or heard it. I could tell you what was inappropriate. And I'm surprised that, Kristen, you are saying that sometimes it happens and I'm uncomfortable, but that's the way the world is, and let's not blow this out of proportion. Maybe it does deserve a little blowing out of proportion. I mean, should you have to put up with that? Should other women continue to have to
if it was persistent, or I felt that my career was being held back or something, I would. I'm just saying that there have been occasions where it's not constant. And plus, I'm old and crabby now, so nobody will mess with me at this age. I see how it could happen earlier in someone's career.
You shouldn't say that either. I'm old and crabby now. A, you're not. But if say you were, or say you were like that woman that's in Big Bang Theory. She wrote that op-ed in the New York Times, and she said, I have the luxury of not being as pretty as all these other women in Hollywood. And your colleague at the Tribune,
Heidi Stevens.
Heidi wrote about that, and she took umbrage with that. I mean, isn't that sort of beside the point? It doesn't matter who you are or how you look. It's that behavior of those guys.
Maybe that's an example, though, of what of the point I'm trying to make, and I'm scared to death to make it, but the words...
The words that
actress used to describe her own situation were found to be inappropriate by Heidi Stevens.
Yeah.
Well, you know... She didn't make them in an inappropriate way in her mind. There's the executor, and then there are the people who receive it, and there are different sorts of barometers from the people who receive it. Some people hear things in a way very much in which they were not intended. That doesn't diminish the fact.
We asked this question last week. Is this story, this Harvey Weinstein story, is it going to change anything? Or is this Me Too hashtag, is it going to raise consciousness to the point that we establish a baseline of acceptable behavior that
What's
is
your answer
higher.
To that? What's your answer?
I hope so. I hope so. I haven't heard a conversation like this about sexual harassment, sexually inappropriate behavior. I haven't heard that kind of conversation be quite this intense for a long time. So I mean, it might be a turning point. It's not going to disappear overnight. But there may be some people who are really reevaluating their behavior now who don't think of themselves as predatory or perverted in some way, but they realize that they are making other people uncomfortable, and they have to, and they maybe will think twice before they say something humorous or make a remark about someone's appearance.
Hopefully it doesn't keep you though from complimenting people.
I think that suggests it's self-awareness that those people don't have.
But maybe it empowers the other people.
And maybe it's me because you know, like I said, I think most harassers don't consider themselves harassers. You know,
we're moving on. The Wall Street Journal this week did a page one story about the Taco Bell across the street from Wrigley Field. In the face of the Ricketts family's efforts to further expand their footprint around the park, a grassroots effort is trying to keep the little Mexican fast food joint alive. Kristen, who are you rooting for in this one? The beautification of Wrigleyville or Taco Bell?
Well, I find myself on the rare side of being on the side of Cubs fans because I absolutely worship Taco Bell. There, I said it. I outed myself.
Judged.
I know. It's fine. Judge me. Streeterville, right around the corner, just opened a little Taco Bell that is now selling alcoholic slushies.
Yeah.
I mean, all my dreams are coming true. So
I thought you were supposed to be drunk when you went to Taco Bell.
Well,
they don't need alcohol there.
That's actually what some of the people interviewed in the story talked about, which is, I love the ding. Like, one of the quotes. Well, everybody you know goes to Wrigley Field to get drunk, and it's the only place that's open past 2 a.m., so of course I want to keep it open. Boom. There's the problem with Cubs fans.
Kristen McQuarrie imitating a Cubs fan.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I give you credit because I thought when John asked if you were rooting for the Cubs or Taco Bell, you were going to say Dodgers.
That too, but...
I can't believe this. I mean, it's not like a mom-and-pop shop. Like, if it was... You know, a couple of people.
A little taqueria or something, yeah.
It came from the old country.
You said it was a Mexican restaurant.
Everybody knows and loves them. It's a franchise. It's a Taco Bell. It's the same thing as the McDonald's that was an ugly, grimy bathroom.
You wouldn't call McDonald's a little Scottish restaurant.
Really? Right. It's the same thing.
So you're not on the side of saving the Taco
Bell.
Well,
my problem too is I'm not a Taco Bell fan. Now, if it was a Burger King, I would be vested in this argument.
Really?
But
Burger
I'm not
King,
a Taco
huh?
Bell guy.
Okay.
So it's,
what's your fast
it's
food,
not my food
confession?
Mine would be, well, I guess I eat at McDonald's more than anything.
Okay.
Seriously? Once a month?
No, less than that.
When I have to choose fast food, Burger King, yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I've thought about this a lot.
You guys hate French fries, huh?
Well, that's it. My passion for fast food is the curly fries at Arby's.
Oh, right.
Oh, no, never.
The Frosty at Wendy's.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
The
I'm with
hamburger
you.
At Burger King. I need Uber Eats to go get one of each of them and then bring them to
you. You got
to
get the McDonald's fry and dip it in the Frosty dairy dessert from Wendy's. That's
what I'm gonna do. You've thought about this evidently more than I have.
bringing the podcast to a complete stop.
I see we've run out of time.
Hold on. I want to get to two things real quick. Senator Durbin went at it with Jeff Sessions. The Trump administration still wants more cooperation from county and city police across the country, including Chicago, and wants to maybe withhold grant dollars because of our sanctuary city status. At least that's how I understand it. Eric, what's your take on this story?
That's my understanding as well.
And who are you rooting for in this one?
I'm rooting for Durbin in this one. I mean,
Haven't the courts already ruled in
yeah,
the
city? Yeah, I thought it was a strange issue to come up. But I understand the sanctuary city arguments, and we've discussed this on this show before, which is that police will tell you that sanctuary city laws, that separating immigration enforcement from local law enforcement is smart law enforcement. It makes people safer. And so I will defer to them. So
well, there was
deferring
Jeff
to everybody
Sessions
today.
Saying, how is it? I can't do a Jeff Sessions, but
that was pretty good.
Somewhere around Elmer Fudd. How is it that you would deny ICE or the federal government these people? If you've got them, hold on to them until we get there. I think that's not only not the duty of county police, but I'm not even sure it's constitutional, what the attorney general was asking.
So. Okay, kidnapping is a federal crime, right?
Well, I don't know that it rises to that level.
Kidnapping is
like
a federal
that.
Crime. So if Barney Fife comes upon a kidnapper, he's going to arrest that person, right? Even though it's a federal crime.
Yeah.
So being in the country illegally is a federal crime. Why would a local police officer not be charged with holding someone for
Let me give you a better example.
I'm against it, but I'm just saying that's their argument.
How about this? I pull you over for speeding or running a stop sign, and I don't even check your immigration status. They would sure appreciate it if we did, especially if it's full of people we think are illegal Mexicans. The counties don't want to do that, and if they discover that, it's not their obligation to hold those people. You don't keep people for a month for speeding. So that's sort of what the federal government is asking, and I don't blame the counties for not wanting to participate in that.
No, I agree with Eric. We're safer if they don't. I mean, we're safer if people believe they can go to the police and not run for their lives from the police every time they have an encounter with them. I'm just saying, you know, strictly legally speaking, I understand what they're saying.
I have a picture here of Michael Madigan, who looks like he was maybe cast as a backup singer in a Bruce Rauner ad.
Is Mr. Rogers? Looks
I know.
Like.
He's
sure
got a flannel shirt on. It's open at the cuff. He's got a rainbow of kids. He's reading to them something like he does this all the time. That looks so staged. It's absolutely comical. But they're trying to soften up his social media image. Now, what have you guys noticed about that?
I don't really think it's going to help. They posted something on, and this is kind of to refute. There are sites about him called like Boss Madigan, and he looks very stern, and he has been dealing for maybe 5 or 6 years now with this whole effort to fire Mike Madigan, and that he's this, you know, he's the wizard behind the curtain. But so now that he has a Facebook page, all of his combatants are sounding off on him on his Facebook page. I mean, it's one of the most ruthless commenting sections that I've seen in a while.
Have you been to the president's?
Oh my God. Well, I'm sure.
Donald Trump, the real Donald Trump, the comments, to their credit, they leave them there. It's just a bloodbath for every single thing he posts.
I think that the creation of this website reflects that this effort that Kristen talked about, the Fire Madigan effort, the relentless campaign that Governor Rauner has run against Madigan, is having an effect. And Madigan is seeing it in his polling. He's not afraid of not getting reelected, but he's afraid of losing his majority. I don't think that's going to happen in 2018, given a number of factors. But this is getting to him, and I have criticized him all along for having this icy public persona. He doesn't do a lot of interviews. Just about every other politician comes into the Tribune editorial board, for instance, and just sits around and talks, takes questions. I mean, am I right about that? Like John Collagen comes in. Mm-hmm. Mayor Emanuel came in yesterday. Governor Rauner comes in. Governors before that have come in. They all come in, and they shoot the bull with us. They answer tough questions. But Madigan never does. Hey, Madigan doesn't do a lot of one-on-ones. He has this above-it-all attitude, and I think it's catching up to him, and I think that this website reflects that.
So you read those comments, they're pretty brutal, huh?
Oh, they're extremely brutal. And I think it just, and personal, you know. And so my issue with Madigan has never been that he's a bad, evil person. I don't like his policy choices. I think he is driven only politically, and I think those positions have actually hurt low and income families in Illinois. That's my beef with him. So when I see personal stuff, I mean, he's a grandfather. I'm sure he's a wonderful, warm grandfather, and behind the scenes, he is not this icy person. But yes, I think they're trying. The governor's race on the Democratic side has already turned into how close are you to Mike Madigan? So it's just going to keep recurring. And this is his effort to, you know, try to help a little bit. Is it working? I don't think so.
Everybody give me 20 seconds on your recommendation. On the other side of the glass, they're giving me the wrap-up for some reason.
I don't have anything.
Good. Eric, go.
I'm going to recommend American Vandal. It's a new series on Netflix. It's a mockumentary.
Oh, my God, eight episodes.
Have you seen it?
Ugh. So good.
It's a mockumentary. It's a true crime about a vandalism at a high school. Hilarious. I've only seen the first episode, but I recommend it.
Yeah. Oh, you've only seen the first episode. It gets better. I mean, it doesn't lose its way. That's for sure.
I have discovered finally, after many years of searching, the lowest cost best Zinfandel. I'm going to share it with you.
Thank you.
Finally, a useful recommendation. Listeners are thinking.
Here's the drum roll.
Finally.
Aren't you glad you hung into this podcast until this point?
The Federalist. Red Zin. Delicious and only about $17 a bottle.
Sometimes
a little less. But yeah, you can't go too much lower than that or you're going to have the headache and everything else. But this is, just try it.
Not sure I like the name.
I love it.
The TV show I'm recommending this week is The Good Place with Ted Danson. I believe it's on NBC. I believe it's in its second season. I just discovered it, and I'm in the second season. It's the most bizarre show about people who realize, oh, we're in hell. And where they thought they were in heaven, it's the good place. They realize that the good place for them is actually hell. And it's very strange, very creative. It's sure not a linear story. It's not the Big Bang Theory where the door knocks and somebody walks in and says something funny. It's a really bizarre, funny, interesting show. It's called The Good Place. And that's this week's Mincing Rascals podcast. Thank you, Ben, for engineering. Ella, for being the producer. I'm John Williams. We got to go. Was there a fire? We'll drop another one on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.